Hello there.
Hello.
How are things this evening?
They're pretty decent.
Been having a hard time getting motivated for anything lately, so jumping on this now while I still have some teeth to jump on things with. did you want to start up with anything?
One thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that Brian is been very good at predicting things.
Yes, that has been amazing.
Like, specifically, I think it was the recap episode for book 3, or an episode around there, where he was like, he basically laid out the plot of the rest of the book, more or less.
Yeah.
I don't remember what exactly he said. It was like, I think he predicted that, like, stuff would happen with her. I don't know if he said Hermione in particular, but I think he's predicted, like, something going wrong. He predicted a fake out, which would be the Date of Monroe thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also said that Voldemort has to be someone who is already, we've already been introduced to, because otherwise it would be a bad story.
Yeah. And he's basically just come to accept now that Quirrell is Voldemort. He's like, there's no point in even pretending he's not anymore, right? It's just the way it is. And he's been treating it as a fact, which he's technically correct. So, you know, it's hard to have it find any fault with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's treating it as 100% certain, but, like, he's definitely treating it as, like, dominant probability.
Yeah, it's basically his model of the story right now, whenever he discusses it.
And, like, he's even been connecting, like, Harry's dark side to Quirrell a lot, which is, like, actually the exact reasoning, or part of the reasoning Harry uses at the end to actually figure it out.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
Yeah. I guess that's what happens when you... Well, my perspective on the story is from binge reading it. I guess if you're reading it as it comes out, then you also would have had time to really think about it.
Yeah. He seems to, like, know structure so well that he's just like, yeah, in the structure of any good story, you'd have these things... These are the rules you would have to follow, and so by following those rules, this is what you get, and... I usually keep an open mind to think, you know, well, there might be some kind of twist, there might be the author's trying to subvert things, but just going with the whole, this is how things should be, tends to get you where you should be 90%+ of the time, so it's a really good model.
Like, I do think there are other ways the story could have gone that wouldn't have been awful, but, like, if you can think of specific other possibilities that would make an interesting story, like... There would have to be some interesting explanation for the Voldemort thing that didn't involve him being any of the characters. And I'm not sure what exactly that would be.
I just assumed Voldemort was actually gone. Like, he'd been written out of the story kind of the same way Ron had been, and Quirrell was a different person, and we just wouldn't run into Voldemort. This whole Dumbledore chasing after a ghost was a red herring that was making Harry's life more difficult, but didn't come to anything, you know? I mean, I was wrong.
That would only work if, like, there was, like, an interesting, like, reason for Dumbledore to be doing that, where it was, like, something about Dumbledore's character made him likely to chase after Voldemort, even though he was actually just dead, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the thing is, like, Voldemort hasn't played a big enough role in the story. Well, a person we know to be Voldemort, or, like, actions mm-hmm. that we... I mean, obviously Voldemort is there, but, like,
right.
He could have not been.
Yeah.
So, like, stuff we actually know to be specifically from Voldemort hasn't played a big role in the story this far,
yeah.
I guess.
I mean, there were a number of things that were explicitly just, like, pulled out of the book right at the very beginning. Like, Harry's parents were changed, so he had a happy childhood. Ron was kicked out of the story right from the beginning. The entire Quidditch thing was just kicked out of the story, so... Like, in those early chapters, there was like, all right, here's the things I'm doing different, and one of them seemed to be there's no Voldemort because there was no turban on Quirrell's head, and we could see that the back of his head didn't have a Voldemort face on it. So I was like, oh, okay, that's another change.
Mm-hmm. That would have worked. Fine. But I have a hard time thinking of a different elegant explanation for everything that happens in this story.
Yeah.
Because... I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you're just like, well, I don't really know how this happens. And then it all gets wrapped up when you understand exactly what's going on with Tom Riddle.
Yes.
But I guess most of that is not, like, even stuff that's already happened at the point they're at. But, you know, like, who memory charmed Hermione? Like,
yeah. So, like, I bought the David Monroe thing, and so there was that, that was a big mystery. Like, I was confused as to how did this happen? How did, who did this to Hermione? And then later the troll thing, it was, but that's not necessarily a problem in a book, right? Because, like, obviously, when you're confused, your model about the world is wrong, but that's part of the fun of a book, is that you don't get all the information, or sometimes you get misled, and eventually you'll find out. And in retrospect, I realized that, yes, what I thought was true that was not true was that Quirrell was Tom Riddle. And if I had had the right model, I would not have been confused, much like Brian is not confused. But I wasn't really worried about that because... You know, it's a story. I'm here for the mystery.
There might actually just be information you don't know.
Exactly. There are oftentimes things hidden, and some kind of monster shows up at the end, being like, "Bwaha, I was behind it all along."
Although that wouldn't be a very good story, I don't think.
No, I agree.
At least for this kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it would have been not as good. And so, I guess if I had had more faith in this is a good story and a good writer, maybe I would have. I mean, I already thought Eliezer was a good writer. I just was like, yeah, there's got to be some other way he's going to pull this out that's really interesting and makes for a good story.
I mean, I think there are other interesting ways it could have gone. But, well, the Harry Stark side is suspiciously similar to Quirrell thing. Like, not having an explanation for that would be kind of weird.
I see. When I was around this part where Mr. Hat Cloak shows up, since... it assured Hermione that Harry would turn against her and do terrible things in the future if she, you know, didn't heed its warnings. What I assumed was that one theory that I had was that Mr. Hat and Cloak could be evil Harry from the future who has repented and is now trying to correct the mistakes that evil Harry did, you know? Kind of like Darth Vader at the end of Return of the Jedi, if he had a time turner and could go back and warn all of Anakin's friends, like, hey, you can't trust Anakin, he's going to do evil things in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I trust the story too much to keep timelines, like, to have a consistent time travel system.
Yeah.
And that kind of does not, like, that would be multiple timeline nonsense, which
time-turners
are clearly not.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wouldn't consider that a very likely possibility.
Yeah, it was just one of the things that had occurred to me, and... As you point out, that would not have been consistent with the time rules of this universe. I was hanging on to anything to be like, Quirrell is awesome. Don't make Quirrell evil.
He's certainly awesome. That doesn't... I don't think being evil changes that.
I don't know. I think being evil makes you distinctly not awesome.
I mean, it depends on what exact definition of awesome you're using, I guess.
Yeah.
He's certainly awe-inspiring.
That's a good point. Like, Darth Vader is more of awesome because he's dark and imposing, whereas Voldemort was, like, a fucking lunatic. I mean, Voldemort was more like the Joker from Dark Knight, right?
In this story? I guess.
Yeah, maybe
not. I'm not sure. I haven't read canon in years, so I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't either. I didn't actually read all of the books, the canon books. I think I stopped around book 5. Because Harry was really becoming an annoying teenage kid at that point. And I'm like...
It's more than Eliezer Red.
Yeah, yeah. talking about Brian, like, I also like the fact that he started getting into the whole kind of munchkinning the world aspects that that a lot of people who... Like, at the very beginning, he was like, ugh, I saw all these stupid rules and rules lawyer stuff. And he still, like, jokes about the bringing his lawyers to stuff. But in I think the most recent episode, or maybe the one before that, they started talking about transfiguring, and could you just transfigure water into gasoline and then use that gasoline to run your car, and then it would turn into water vapor afterwards and there'd be no pollution. I was like, yes, Brian, that's wonderful. You're doing the thing. You're thinking about the consequences of the magic system and how they could be applied to cheat and make the world better, and that's fun, right? And I get the feeling he enjoyed doing that, even if it was only for a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that, but yeah, he definitely is doing that more now.
Yeah, and he also, at one point said that I believe his words, I guess I did learn a lesson from this book, when he explained about the flower permeable dragon and how he thinks that Quirrell is doing that, that he sees Quirrell making up all these excuses because he knows what he has to hide from Harry. And, like, I kind of, like, smiled and got the warm fuzzies from that, because it turns out that I guess fiction can help teach people things in a way, and he totally, like, applied that that flower permeable dragon lesson to stuff, like, months later that he was reading, and I guess that stuck. So in some ways, the methods of rationality are starting to get through a little bit.
What part was that at, or he...
I think that was when Quirrell and Harry, right after Azkaban, they were in the abandoned warehouse. And,
okay.
Yeah, Harry kept asking him things, and Quirrell was like, well, you're a stupid head. Except in much
more... I need to look at that scene again. That was an interesting scene.
Yeah, I love that one.
Because, like, that's, I think, one of the biggest points where Harry starts, like, actually questioning Quirrell.
Yeah.
I guess maybe also the part where he's looking at Quirrell as a possibility for the troll.
Yeah.
And then, of course, at the end, he figures it out.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, though, you know, I mean, Quirrell straight up tells him, do you think he would have figured it out? I'm sure eventually he would have, but
I don't know. Figured what out?
That Quirrell was Voldemort.
I mean, does he not figure it out at the end? I mean...
I thought that, like, Quirrell just told him, right? Or did he...
Harry...
He did figure it out, you're right.
There's that, like, very, like, long scene where Harry's like, okay, so what is happening here? Comes up with, like, a bunch of hypotheses or whatever, and is like, okay, the only explanation that does not involve stupid coincidences is everything being caused by a Quirrell.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And then I think the connection specifically to him being Voldemort is the dark side thing. Harry calls him Voldemort before he actually says anything, because there's the High Lord Voldemort, High Tom Riddle thing.
Yeah.
So Harry figures it out on his own, although not until some really weird stuff happens to, like, prompt him to seriously think about it.
Right. We're getting pretty close to the end now, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, the fourth book is almost over, right?
Yeah, I think we've only got a couple chapters left.
Does that end after the Hermione trial arc?
Yes, and then there's a whole bunch of aftermaths, and these are the aftermaths where the David Munro explanation is introduced.
Oh, they look at Quirrell as an explanation, not just for the troll, but also for the memory charm stuff. Okay.
Yeah. So I thought it was also pretty impressive that, in terms of Brian coming up with things and predicting things, that he came to this conclusion when Snape met with Rihanna Felthorn and then implanted the memory of her having found the ruby and then deciding to put it in her bank vault and not tell anybody. That he came to this conclusion that implanting memories that didn't happen, including memories of deciding to do something, is like basically mind control. And I kind of absorbed that as I was reading it, but I never came to that, like, explicitly stated conclusion in my head. And the fact that Brian did, I thought, was pretty awesome, because it was going to be super important in a coming up chapter. And the fact that he had already that idea in mind was definitely going to help him out with that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realize that that section probably served, like, the explicit purpose of introducing us to that, how, like, mind memory charms worked, so that we'd understand it going into Hermione's, it being used on Hermione.
Yeah. But then that also, what did you think about Brian during that scene where he's talking about Snape talking with Rihanna? Because he seemed like he was being a huge dick to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember exactly how it went. I remember it seeming kind of weird, but I wouldn't say he came off as a dick necessarily to me.
He kept saying that, like, I can have no sympathy for Snape, that Snape's never kissed a girl, what a total loser he is.
Oh yeah, that was...
Yeah, and I was like...
I don't know if that's exactly what he was saying, but, like, he said a few things that sounded like that, which were like,
Yeah, I was like, man, you know what? If you're calling someone a total loser for having never kissed a girl, maybe you're the dick in this situation, and not the guy who's never kissed someone. Like, wow, you can't feel any sympathy for him? That's... I don't know. I felt like he was basically completely reinforcing the whole losers are losers and we should pick on them for being losers kind of thing, instead of feeling some sort of sympathy for this guy who has never even kissed someone because he's had such traumatic psychological issues with his, you know, affection. He kept thinking, like, Snape is just this loser and that, like, makes him really shallow or something. And to me, I got the impression when I was reading the story that Snape was a lot more nuanced than the canon Snape was. Because in the canon Snape, you know, he was just a really mean jerk until later he was retconned into having a tragic backstory. So, you know, now he has this tragic backstory too, but it seemed like everyone that suddenly redeemed him in their eyes, in all the readers' eyes. And in this story, Snape is like, he's still got the tragic backstory, but it doesn't just make him someone who was suppressing his true love all along. It, like, he actually is kind of a mean jerk, but he has these issues about it, and you, like, see him wrestling with trying to get through life and deal with his spiky, unpleasant nature. But, like, the story isn't trying to excuse his actions. The story's like, yeah, Snape is a jerk, and he does have these issues, but you get to understanding why they're like that, and that just seemed more like a more believable representation of someone with these issues than just, you know, he's secretly still in love with a girl from his past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember exactly how canon Snape was presented, but, like, with this Snape, I, like, get the impression that he's, like, trying to, to the extent he can, while still being the evil potions master, not actually cause harm to people. Like, I mean, he sneaks around behind Dumbledore's back to try to help Spew.
Yeah.
But, like, with canon, like, I feel like he's just being a jerk, and, like, an unrepentant jerk, except that, like, he's also doing some stuff for Dumbledore.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, I agree. I'm not sure I'm confident just saying this one is more nuanced, but because I understand this one more because I have read it more recently. So obviously I'm gonna see the nuance that is there more clearly. But, like, I mostly agree.
Okay. Well, I have one big complaint that I will get into after we have more things, if you have anything else you would want to bring up.
There's one thing we were talking about in the Discord the other day, I think with Within Reason, where he was like, he started, like, liking Harry for a bit, and then now he's calling him a jerk more often again.
Yeah. Both of the most recent two episodes started out with Brian talking about how big of an asshole Harry is for at least 10 minutes.
Was it really that long?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like the episodes start off with them derailing before they go into talking about Harry.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is, this was actually what I was going to bring up too, that I completely agree with Within Reason on this, because Brian hated Harry from the very beginning, and I guess he thought maybe this is a redemption story about how this terrible asshole learns to not be so terrible, like, you know, the Grinch Who Stole Christmas story or something. But I don't think Harry is a terrible asshole. And from everything I can tell, I know I've said this before on the podcast several times, but it seems to me that Brian loves hierarchies. Like, he will defend them simply because they are hierarchies and the people at the top have the most status and should be defended. And Harry, like, hates hierarchies, and probably to a much greater extent than is actually healthy and reasonable. Like, the hierarchies do serve some purpose, and fighting them constantly is going to kind of give you some real costs. But I'm on Harry's side with this. Like, I also really dislike hierarchies. I understand why they exist, and I suffer them for the reasons that everyone else really has to, but, like, I do not sit around filleting the headmaster because he's the headmaster, whereas Brian is doing exactly that, and any time someone comes along and is like, you know, I have some ideas too, why are you filleting the headmaster so much? He's like, stop being an asshole! You may be right, but you're an asshole, you know? I really hate how he keeps using that Big Lebowski quote, because I love the movie, and it's actually a pretty good quote, but when it's used, Walter really is just being an asshole, and Harry lots of times is bringing things that are important to the conversation, and really just wants to have some input into things that are happening in his life. Like, he's going to be subject to these control. There's no reason why he can't. There's some reason why he can't have full control of it, but most of that reason boils down to he's a child and there are adults, and adults are higher up in the hierarchy, so he has to suck it up and do what they say. And just the fact that he is constantly calling an asshole for not supporting these hierarchies really, really annoys me. And it's gotten to the point that I'm not entirely sure I'm going to keep listening to the podcast, because I start getting upset, and that sucks, because I want to know what Brian's reaction to the David Monroe reveal is going to be. I kind of want to see him with the whole Hermione troll attack, and then calling. I think it is likely that he's going to call Harry an asshole for trying to save Hermione. That he's going to be like, look at this asshole thinking that he can save Hermione when he should be going to the authorities instead.
Like, I do not. I absolutely do not think he is going to say that.
I would not be at all surprised if, like, when Harry's looking around in the library trying to figure out how to get out of here, how to get past Hagrid, that he's going to be like, Harry's being an asshole again. When he's just trying to, you know, save Hermione's fucking life.
I feel like he might use the word asshole to describe something Harry does then, but, like, it's not going to be as nuanced as just he's being an asshole right now. Like, maybe he acts, like, I think arguably he does, like, handle that confrontation with the librarian, not as well as he could have, but, like, he's also, you know, under a ridiculous amount of stress, and, yeah. Like, he does, like, trying to focus on politeness is not what you need to do at that time, and I think there definitely lies a bunch of fault with the librarian for not, you know, taking Harry seriously.
I really don't think that's going to matter to him. Like, it was pointed out that in the Spew arc, like, it turned out that he kept defending Dumbledore and saying, there's all these things Harry doesn't know, that why is he shoving his nose in it? But really, the kids were being abused, and it could have been stopped, because as we see at the end of the Spew arc, Dumbledore does indeed get together with the Death Eaters and the other powers that be and stops it. And so he was wrong about this spark. Well, yeah, the bullying gets drastically cut down after the spark.
I mean, the bullying gets cut down on, but I don't think that's because of anything Dumbledore does. I think that if anything, it's because of what Snape does.
Well, yeah, but Snape does it with Dumbledore's blessing. It's not like Snape did this.
Does he?
Yeah, they talk the whole thing through. There's no way Snape would have done this without Dumbledore.
I mean, Snape was doing a bunch of stuff without Dumbledore's blessing.
Well, in terms of interfering with the Spew girls, yeah, but, like, we see Snape and Minerva, Harry, and Dumbledore all talking about what to do about this the bullying situation, right?
After the Spew arc?
Yeah, pretty sure. Like, at the end there is a meeting. Like, that's the reason Minerva doesn't come to the table as well, because she knows what's going to happen, and she just can't stand to be there to see it happening when Snape is going to be grinding down Miss Granger and taking away 100 points.
I mean, Harry definitely was not at the meeting that decided that part.
Right, but Snape and Dumbledore and Minerva, like, hashed this out.
I mean, they hashed that part out, but I don't think that the part where, like, Snape is like, don't go attacking people, you're making a fool of our house, is something that Dumbledore necessarily... I'm not talking about Snape,
okay,
like, shutting
down
Spew.
Yeah.
I'm talking about him, like, shutting down the bullies in Slytherin, which we see that scene of him doing.
Right.
And I don't think he had necessarily Dumbledore's permission for that.
No, I agree with you. I think that is correct. He did that on his own. But, you know, there was stuff done that prevented a war from breaking out, and the bullying was greatly curtailed, and all this time, Dumbledore was sacrificing children because he was, you know, too terrified of doing anything, and Harry fixed it. So, you know, Harry was right! I don't know, maybe it makes him an asshole to save children from this... from all this abuse, but he did do it, and you know, if that's being an asshole, maybe we could use more assholes. Like, he kept saying, like, oh, there's these two factions in the school, and I just, it's my opinion that, like, if the Hatfields and McCoys can't go to school together without either going to war or tolerating child abuse, then they shouldn't go to the same school. And if Dumbledore, like, needs them to go to the same school so he can have this impenetrable fortress, and he's willing to sacrifice children to keep his impenetrable fortress, then maybe that's a necessary thing, but then Harry is not the dick in that situation. Dumbledore is the asshole in that situation. And that's... I get so frustrated when he's like, yeah, Harry's being an asshole again. I'm like, no, Harry is just expecting to be treated with the same respect that you would give to any freaking adult who was put in this kind of situation.
Okay, so I have two things I want to say. First, I saw something, I think it was a Reddit post by Kowski that he made at some point, where he said that Harry does not look for... Like, he looks at the edge of the solution space to find the most... try to find solutions there, and then does not always try to, like, dial down to find more, I guess, sensible solutions to problems.
He does tend to like drama.
And that really brought to mind the part where he, like, you know, glues all the bullies to the ceiling.
Yeah.
So, like, I do think, like, there probably were things Harry could do that would have been, like, it's like a false dichotomy of, like, he does this and it's better than doing nothing, but he didn't really try to find, like, better ways to achieve the same goals.
Right.
Probably, which I think is legitimately a bad move on Harry's part. Mm-hmm. But also, so I think Dumbledore does have a point there. But I also think, like, the simplest read of the book is that Dumbledore is just incorrect that the bullying is a necessity. And I think someone should bring this up to the We Want More guys, because I would like to see them address that.
Yeah.
Because they seem to think, like, Dumbledore had points there, and I think he, I mean, the bullying seems to have stopped, and nothing went catastrophically wrong. So Dumbledore, either something Harry did, like, changed the political situation enough that they could get away with it, and it would have to be something Harry did that Dumbledore was unable to do for Dumbledore to be unable to actually stop the bullying.
Yeah.
So... like, it seems that Dumbledore was just incorrect, that there is no good way to do it.
Well, you know, somebody without enough status to try tried to fix it, and that makes that person the asshole.
I still feel like that's not how it works in Brian's head, but I don't really have a better explanation. I guess, like, I feel like they expect perhaps an unreasonable degree of politeness from Harry. And that's really the part that is, I don't think if he tried to stop the bullying and did it in, like, a not dramatic way, and he just, you know, found some clever way to do it, that they would have a problem with that. I don't think it's literally, he tried, he doesn't have enough status. Like, I think it's, you know, like...
Yeah, it's the fact that Harry does not respect authority and does not respect the hierarchies as much as Brian thinks that he should.
But, I mean, that respect, like, seems to be, like, you know, talking to them politely and stuff more so than, like, trying to do things out of, like, he doesn't seem to think that Harry should just obey them, but that, like, he shouldn't, I mean, I guess, talk in an assholish way to them.
I don't think Harry talks in an assholish way, necessarily. He just talks like someone who has more status than Brian is willing to say an 11-year-old boy has.
I don't find much wrong with most of the things Harry says, but I think I also have, like, a higher asshole tolerance than those people.
Well, the thing is, I don't have problems with things Harry says either, but that is because he's usually correct in what he says, or at the very least, there's some things that if they were said by another adult in the room, they would be taken more seriously. Like, Brian would not have said, this guy is being a total asshole, if it was, like, Lucius Malfoy that came into the room and said those things.
He absolutely, well, I mean, I think everyone thinks Lucius is an asshole, so they might not specifically say that, because, like, he's Lucius freaking Malfoy.
And so it's expected of him, you mean?
Yeah, like, I mean, like, yeah. Because, okay. You know, everyone thinks this guy is, I mean, he is a Malfoy.
Right.
And he's not, you know, Draco who's been turned by Harry.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, I don't think Harry's age is irrelevant to him being perceived as an asshole, but I think, like, I do think there are things he says that would legitimately rub people the wrong way, regardless of his age, and I think that's confounded by the fact that he's 11.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's definitely confounded by the fact that he's 11.
I think there might be less emphasis on it if he were not, like, if he were of higher status, if he were, like, an adult, but I do think, like, it would still be, like, noticed somewhat. It just might not be, like, an emphasis of the podcast as much.
Yeah, I think if it was an adult or someone with a higher status position in the community, Brian would have been like, well, okay, now Dumbledore should explain to him what he's missing and why he's mistaken, as opposed to saying, God, that guy's being an asshole, and he should just be blown off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that people should be treated with less respect just because Brian considers them to be lower down on the social ladder, which is what he thinks of Harry and of, I'm assuming, children in general.
I find this entire conversation really interesting because Brian, in the latest episode, said that he does not see status as important.
Yeah, I know, which is absolutely someone who thinks that status is the most important thing and doesn't even realize that this is how they view the world would say, right?
I don't know, I mean,
like, this, when he said that, I didn't quite laugh, because it would be a lie to say that I laughed out loud, but, like, I smiled and I had the internal chuckling thing, because it was absolutely the same way that, that the religious people I used to know would say, back when I was a kid, would say, look, I'm not homophobic. I don't hate gay people. I'm just God-fearing, you know? And I'm like, no, you hate gay people. You just don't realize it because you're so deep in this worldview that it doesn't feel to you like hating gay people.
I would like to see if you could pass an ideological Turing test for Ryan.
I probably could not.
Yeah, like, I feel like...
Maybe if I really tried, I do not believe him for one second. I mean, I believe that he thinks status isn't important to him, but I think that subconsciously it's one of the most important things to him.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious if that model would be good enough to actually explain all of his behavior. Because I'm not sure if it is.
No, I'm sure not all of it, but any...
Well, I mean, obviously... It's not going to explain. Like, I mean, I guess is consistent with.
Okay, you mean like his behavior in terms of the podcast?
Well, yes, of course.
Okay, gotcha.
Because I feel like I don't really have a better explanation for stuff, but I don't feel like yours. Something feels off about it, and I'm not sure what exactly it is.
You know what? Because God, these next chapters are so good. I went ahead and read forward on them. There was.
Yeah, I listened to the entire rest of the audiobook like a couple weeks ago.
Oh, holy shit! Yeah. I was reading. I was like, oh, here's this one scene where I bet you anything, like Harry and Hermione basically say and do parallel things. But Hermione couches them more politely, and I'm going to be like, and I thought, this right here is one of these places where Brian is going to say, God, Harry is such an asshole, and not even realize that Hermione was doing the same thing, just couching it differently. I'm going to, you know what? I will find that, and I will make an advanced prediction as to how Brian is going to react to that, and we'll see if he actually does. Assuming they even mention it, of course, maybe it'll just be passed right over.
I mean, like, I think there is a legitimate argument that, like, the couching is... Like, I think that, you know, when you say, like, you may be right, but you're an asshole, like, that might... I think, like, if you're right, then that's the part where, like, Harry and Hermione are both right, but the difference in how they're couching is the part that makes you an asshole, I think, from Brian's perspective.
Yeah, but, like, he pointed out that Harry, when he was in the lunchroom telling all the kids, you know what, you're wrong, and I want you to come, and if you have any courage at all, sign the statement right here, saying what you're saying. And, like, he said that was kind of a dick thing to do, and I'm like, I think it was an entirely justified thing to do, and that these kids should feel bad when they later find out Hermione was innocent, and that this is a good thing that Harry's doing that will maybe... keep them from being such complete, insufferable, I don't want to say evil people, because they weren't being evil, they were just being dumb, they were being normal humans, and I thought that was not at all an asshole thing Harry was doing. It was a good thing.
I mean, like, I understand that, like, most people would see what Harry's doing there as at least very weird, and it would not come off right to most people.
It's definitely weird. It's not a thing a lot of people do, but to make people, like, stand up for what they're saying and put it, you know, down on paper, I don't think that's an asshole thing to do at all. Especially when what they're doing, saying, is calling Hermione a murderer.
I don't think I would do something equivalent to that, because I don't think I would get taken seriously.
Yeah.
And, like, it's hard for me to, like, actually... Like, I feel like doing that is a bad idea for various reasons, mostly related to PR. But, like, it's hard for me to, like, figure out, like, whether that actually means that it's a bad thing to do, like, morally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I don't understand everything of that sort well enough that, like, this is bad because people will think you're being a jerk if you do it, and this is actually, like, something that is bad to do. Yeah. Like, it's difficult for me to disentangle that.
Yeah. It's much less difficult for me to disentangle that, and I know that sometimes I'm wrong, but for the most part, the fact that those things are disentangled is what infuriates me when Brian, or, you know, anyone really, but specifically Brian in this case, will look at someone who's doing the right thing that is socially frowned upon and call them an asshole for it.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and I think that is a large, like, almost, I'm not going to say, like, all, but, like, a very large part of why you have a problem with a lot of the things he says.
Yeah. I agree. That's totally most of it.
I mean, maybe that's why I have less of a problem with a lot of things Brian says, because, like, I definitely think there is a distinction there, but I'm not always confident whether certain things are or are not, like, okay, even though they're very socially frowned upon.
Yeah.
So, like, I see Brian arguing for one side and, like, I guess the rest of the Discord often arguing for the other. And I'm like, well, I mean, these both sound like, you know, fairly plausible stances. I don't strongly disagree with either of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I do disagree strongly with Brian on a few things, but, you know, for the, like, the majority of the things he says, like, are maybe I don't agree with, but they seem, you know, like, sensible.
I think the thing that gets me is that this is heroic fiction, and this is, like, what we want to see in our heroes, right? In real life, it really is fucking hard to stand up to people who are calling you a jerk and, when you know you're right. And it'll cost you social capital. It'll cost you friends sometimes. And it sucks, but you do what's the right thing anyway, because it is the right thing. And I didn't necessarily have a... Not necessarily. I actually didn't have a lot of friends when I was growing up, and part of that was because, I was taught by my religion, hey, you can't celebrate birthday parties, you can't salute the flag. Whenever anyone asks you why you don't do that, you give them this this spiel about how the whole religious stuff, right? And it kind of made me an outcast, but it also taught me how to stand up for things that I think are important, even when they're socially unpopular. And so, yeah, lots of times I was the outcast and I didn't have a lot of friends, but I thought it was worth it. And other times I do buckle, and because I do want to have friends, and that kind of stuff is important. And I always feel a little guilty about that afterwards, but the whole point of having heroic fiction like this is that you get to see someone doing the right thing and maybe being socially ostracized and losing friends, but you cheer for him anyway because it's the right thing. And in the end, he gets rewarded and he wins the book or whatever because he's the hero and it's a fantasy and this is our fiction that we read to see actual justice done. And so that's why I'm always cheering Harry on. I'm like, yeah, Harry, you do the right thing. Maybe it's a little bit of a jerk thing to do. Maybe you overdo it sometimes. But ultimately, this is the hero fantasy. And thank God someone is putting this out there. And then, just Brian comes in and is just like all the kids who are like, man, what an asshole. He should just salute the flag and celebrate his birthday and, stop being such a jerk, Harry. I'm like, fuck you, Brian. Fuck you. This is exactly what I wanted to see. So, maybe that's probably why I'm taking it too personally.
Yeah, I mean, in my experience, I feel like often when I, everyone is saying one thing, I'm like, well, I don't really agree with that. When that's done, I've come to realize later on that actually I was wrong and being a jerk. And I think that's why I can empathize more with what Brian's saying, because, sometimes you're actually wrong when you do that.
Yeah, that's and, true.
I mean, again, I feel like Brian is taking that too far, but it's still, I also feel like everyone else is kind of taking it too far by saying everything Harry does is okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true too. If I'm going to be totally fair about it. Yeah, so, I don't know. I guess I just kind of had to get that out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a trade-off that's hard to balance.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to keep listening for at least a little while because I really want to see how Brian is going to respond to the David Monroe thing, but I just... I was starting to get tired of, getting really aggravated every Monday. I just don't need that right now, wet with the corona and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. That's understandable. I don't think I can stop now, because we're hitting the parts of the book that are getting really...
I know!
We're hitting, the climax.
Yeah!
I mean, not quite yet, but, we're heading up towards it quickly. So, I'm really excited for seeing how Brian reacts to a lot of things.
Yeah. I'm definitely putting in as an advanced prediction, though, that Brian is going to think that Harry was being an asshole during the whole trying to save Hermione thing by trying to get around Hagrid and then with how he reacts to the librarian and all that. Just the fact that he's trying to do things on his own and circumventing the adults that are in the room to do them is going to make Brian say that, man, Harry's being an asshole again.
My expectation is that he will not have a problem with how Harry treated Hagrid, but I think that the way he handled the librarian thing was, not only rude, which I am very willing to excuse him given the situation, but also just, not, optimal for saving Hermione even. So I feel like he'll have a problem with that part, which I agree with, but I don't think he's gonna think that Harry in general is just being awful there.
I mean, I don't know about general and awful, but I definitely predict hearing the words Harry and asshole in the same sentence.
Yes, I expect that to happen also.
Okay.
Although specifically, I do not think Harry does anything to Hagrid that would be seen as a problem by Brian. Although I haven't actually read the section, so maybe I should read it over before making that prediction.
Too late, the prediction is made. No taking backsies.
Ah, darn. I mean, I'm willing to stand by that prediction. I'm just going to have much lower odds than if I had had the opportunity to read the section.
Right.
Or more even odds, I guess I should say.
Yeah. All right, well, that is basically everything I had.
But I mean, one thing I wanted to note is that Brian mentions near the end of the latest episode that Harry could do something with the Dementor. And I think that's like exactly how he starts the next chapter, which is like, I mean, that's really, Brian is getting the Munchkin-y thinking, I think. That's the same sort of thing.
Wait a minute, what chapter did they read up through?
180? Let me go look at it. Because, I mean, it ended off with, like, them being about to do the vote and Harry, like, trying to think of something.
Oh, shit, okay, I thought they got through that next chapter. No, you're right, yeah, and Harry is about to do a thing with the Dementor. That's pretty damn awesome, again.
Okay, he doesn't do the Dementor thing immediately. The first thing he does in the next chapter is, does the marriage stuff.
Yeah, the Dementor is near the end, but still.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, there still is something that Harry does. Which is, you know, I certainly didn't notice that was an option for Harry.
No.
I don't know if the community did, while waiting for the chapter 82.
Alright, I'm definitely staying around for a few more episodes now, because, yeah, I do want to see how that plays out.
I definitely want to see how Brian reacts to the fact that he was right about that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, Harry doesn't do exactly what Brian said, but, like,
right.
Like, the general concept of using the Dementor for something.
Mm-hmm. Flexing his power and scaring the other people in the room with what they can do to the Dementor.
Mm-hmm. I mean, arguably just, like, controlling the Dementor is, like, more... I mean, the Patronus 2.0 is one thing, but, like, I feel like just getting a Dementor to do what he wants is more mysterious than that.
Yeah.
Like, I think that people understand the concept of, okay, he made a more powerful Patronus, that makes sense, but he can make Dementors do... Like, he can scare Dementors? Like, what? What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I'm back into being excited for future episodes. You have convinced me.
That is good. I'm glad I was able to convince you, because otherwise this podcast would start hitting roadblock.
Right. It'd have to be a solo podcast, and those just aren't nearly as fun.
God, I have no idea how I would talk about this for an hour. I have to find a different co-host, probably.
Yeah. You could just start off every sentence with, "and another thing."
Just do that for an entire hour.
Yes. Riveting podcasting.
I feel like solo podcasts work when they're, like, heavily scripted, but you can't have, like, a conversation.
Right.
I mean, I think it can be done, but it's harder. You need to have, like, a topic you can really go on about planned out, rather than just, like, discussing, you know... a podcast you listen to.
Right. And general impressions of it.
Mm-hmm.
I do like, I guess, to end on a positive note, Brian's note about Harry feels that he has to do everything, and that's an extremely lonely thing. And yeah, and that's one of the things I love about the book, that Harry is in that mindset, and it is really lonely, and, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to be, but that is the way he is, and it's very satisfying for me to read that sort of thing. And he even finds some friends throughout the course of the book, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, I even feel like, at the end of the book, I feel like he starts getting taken more seriously by the adults, which is something I'm really interested in seeing how Brian reacts to, actually.
I would assume that once he shows how seriously the adults are taking him, that Brian's gonna jump right on that train and be like, oh yeah, we should totally respect Harry now, see how everyone else is respecting him, because that's how hierarchies work. You mimic the people who are in charge.
Yeah, I don't actually know how I expect him to react, because, like, I mean, on the one hand, I feel like Harry becomes, like, he does not... We only, like, really get the one scene in, like, the Something to Protect Albus Dumbledore chapter, where, like, Harry is talking to, you know, McGonagall and... Bones and Moody about, like, the plan going forth, and I feel like he acts more tactfully than he often does when talking to Dumbledore in that scene. So I think, like, Brian would have legitimate reasons to think that he's being less of an asshole, other than just, like, he has higher status now.
Right. But a large part of that is because adults start actually treating him like a real person. Like, one of the reasons Harry is so assertive and aggressive is because that's the only way he can get any adults to pay any attention to him, as opposed to just saying, you know, shoo off, little boy.
I feel like Dumbledore would take Harry seriously even if he wasn't super, I guess, assertive.
Dumbledore would, but...
I don't know about other adults.
Yeah.
I mean, what adults wouldn't, like... Who does he talk to other than, like, Dumbledore and Quirrell?
I mean, I think the only reason that that other people do take Harry as seriously as they do is because they see Dumbledore interacting with Harry in a at least somewhat equalish fashion. Not, like, entirely, but Dumbledore takes him more seriously than he takes other students, and when other people see Dumbledore doing that, they do the same. They at the very least stop and think, you know, huh, why is he treating this 11-year-old like this?
I don't know. I feel like it's actually easier than most people seem to think to have adults take you seriously. Like, few people try, but I think most, like, at Hogwarts and often in real life, most people would be willing to, like, listen to your concerns and take them seriously if you brought them up.
Do you think if you're 11, though?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really model Harry as actually being 11.
Right, so that's the problem. I don't either. I think of him more as a teenager, and yeah, adults tend to start taking teenagers somewhat seriously. Not, like, all the way yet, but more than how they would treat an 11-year-old. I mean, that's Harry's big problem. He's got the psychology of a 65-year-old man and an 11-year-old body.
Is it... I mean, wouldn't it be more the age when... I don't think he was 65.
Okay, it might not be...
That number
seems
off.
Okay. I don't know exactly what number it is, but older than 11 at any rate.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's all I have to say.
Yep, that's all I got too. So thank you for joining us again. I feel a lot better now, and maybe...
I'm glad I could cheer you up.
Yes, it worked quite a bit. And maybe we can meet up in another 2 or 3 weeks and do this again.
Yeah, hopefully not several months.
Yes.
We'll see.
Life has calmed down a lot now that I've gotten myself moved in here.
Especially since more is going on, so we might have more to talk about now that we're hitting, like, some of the really... I mean, this few arc wasn't so much about Harry, so I feel like there might have been less to talk about there because Brian would have disagreed with everyone less.
That's a good point.
Although, I mean, we talked about the bullying stuff that Harry confronted Dumbledore about and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, a lot of serious stuff is going down now and will be for the rest of the book. It's really kicking into high gear, so yep. I think we should... It would probably be a good idea to not spend 2 months between each episode.
Absolutely. Have a good night.
You too.